bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into Bet the Board podcast powered by Bet Online, episode 2. And boys and girls, we are finally playing for keeps. NFL regular season action to break down, highlighted by the Broncos and Panthers kicking things off on Thursday night. We will, of course, get to that in due time. I am your host, Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. We'll be joined in just a second by my co-host, Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at Payne Insider. And, of course, the podcast itself, at Bet the Board Pod. And Payne, I'm thankful for our audience who doesn't know you all that well that Florida State came back last night, biggest comeback in school history, because you would have been a real surly bitch getting up to do this to break down week one of the NFL regular season had they been off alone.
It would have been miserable. You would have got a bunch of one-word answers. All of a sudden, Jimbo kicked things in at halftime, made some adjustments. And this really isn't new. Now 7-0 under Jimbo Fisher when trailing at halftime. So he was able to make those adjustments. DJ Francois, or however you pronounce his name, really stepped up in the second half, started to use his legs a little bit more. They realized the protection wasn't there up front, rolled them out a bunch. And finally, that defense that was kind of playing on adrenaline and hype, we thought would be horrible and was getting trounced all spring by the offense of Ole Miss, really kind of showed what they were late in that game.
And we finally saw birth of a superstar in DeAndre Francois for Florida State. Of course, we are not a college football podcast, but Payne, I'm sure we'll get plenty of analysis from you on the Seminoles in their quest for a national championship. Big announcement. Wanted to let our listeners know we were able to secure a new sponsor last week, the American Gaming Association, coming on board. Hopefully, we'll be able to feature a lot of their initiatives, get their CEO on here to break down some of the ongoing legalization efforts taking here in the States. But we'll cover that in a little bit more detail. For those new to the podcast this season, Tuesday won't be our typical recording day. We'll often look to give you a recap of the weekend that was on Monday, full in-depth breakdown of the Monday night football game to get you out of the hole with your bookmaker or put a cherry on top, which what we think should be a great weekend more often than not. Thursdays, you can catch the full weekend preview. We won't go through every single game on the slate, but we'll hit a lot of the marquee matchups. We'll have Dave Mason with us to break down some of the house liability, sharp action, what they're looking at Bet Online, and of course share a lot of the great promotions that we're going to make available to you each and every week throughout the football season. If you haven't visited our brand spanking new website, check that out, bettheboardpodcast.com. All sorts of great merchandise, t-shirts, and we're always looking for your feedback. So if there's things you guys would like to see in the way of articles and whatnot, please feel free to share with us. And Payne, rather than letting you and I talk to set the tone, let's bring in the one, the only, Dave Mason. You can follow Dave on Twitter, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, we mentioned some of the college football games and what we saw. How was the weekend overall for the house?
Overall, it was a good weekend. Good weekend of our college football action. The numbers are good. This early in the season, we really want to see how many actives are coming back. You know, a lot of guys, after the Super Bowl last year, they disappear, and they're not taking advantage of our basketball and MLB. They just disappear. They just want to bet football. So,
well, Dave, they were just waiting. They were just, hold on. They were, you know, it wasn't that they didn't want to bet basketball. They were just waiting for Bet the Board to come back. You know, they needed the loyal guidance that Payne and I provide for them each and every week throughout the fall.
Right. Well, like I said last year, you guys should do this all year round. So there's the hint right there. no, but numbers were good. The results were good for the house. Last night, we got our teeth kicked in a little bit and gave a lot back. But overall, the house did well this weekend. Numbers are up. Numbers are looking good. The results are good for the house. But, you know, that goes up and down every week. So week one score for the house. The big winners for the house were Auburn, Wisconsin, and Texas. the players profited on Bama, Ohio State, and again, last night was the big one.
Dave, let's change gears. This is an NFL podcast. We know BetOnline went to market with NFL Week 1 lines in April. By percentage, how much action will you have taken the last 5 months versus what you're going to do game day for Week 1?
Well, 5 months, last 5 months versus game day, or last 5 months versus from now until game, you know.
Let's just talk about game day. Yeah, 5 months.
Game day?
Game day, Sunday.
Yeah, I'd say about 40% will come in on game day. You know, week one is usually a little different because not only are some guys betting, you don't see a lot of action from, I guess we opened them when, in April, I guess that was?
Yeah, April 15th.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of action from April until late August. But, you know, like I said, a lot of people are coming back to the site for the first time since last February. So they're all this week and last week. So there is a lot of action pouring in. Guys that are just ready to bet, you know, they haven't placed a bet since last February. So they're ready to, you know, pull the trigger. So it is a little bit there is some good action last week, and there's more early action this week than there is on a regular typical week. But, you know, April until a couple weeks ago, not a whole lot, not a whole lot at all. And, you know, the limits are still kind of low up until then, so you're not seeing any big bets, you know, you're a dime at most. But
And Dave, yeah. When you talk about some of the action coming in, you know, as we know, a lot closer to kickoff than it does in the months leading up to it, you know, what are some of the most heavily bet games you guys are seeing right now, anticipating some massive handle on the Thursday night kickoff game and, say, Sunday being the high-profile marquee matchup of the weekend with Arizona or New England? Or do they assume that, hey, there's no Peyton Manning for Denver, there's no Tom Brady for New England, that it may temper some of that enthusiasm?
No, it's week one. It's week one. These guys are ready. I mean, the action on Thursday's game is huge. It's coming in. It's pouring in. Most of it on Panthers. But, we still haven't seen a lot of action on the Sunday night and Monday night game, but we will. I mean, sure, that Rams 49ers game isn't the best game, but the action will be there. Primetime games, week one, you're going to see a lot of action. I mean, even though Tom Brady's not playing in that Patriots game, that game will see more action than any game on Sunday, and the late Monday night game, definitely the Rams 49ers. So,
speaking on that action, Dave, what have we seen so far in the way of overwhelming sharp money on a side or total, or overwhelming public money on a side or total?
Overwhelming sharp action? Not a whole lot as of yet. Hardly any so far. I mean, the big movers have been all pretty much because of quarterback situations or injuries or whatever. So, I mean, we saw a little bit of sharp action on the Saints at a pick. They're in minus one. But besides that, I mean, we're not going to see any sharp action probably till Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Just not a lot. I mean, there's some big public sides out there, but they're not – those public sides really aren't moving the numbers that much.
Yeah, it's always interesting to try and see what the betting public likes to do and how much the preseason impacts some of the public perception. Of course, we'll get a much better indication, Dave, of how good or bad these teams may be when we see them finally start playing for real on Sunday. And Dave, as always, like when we have you on, what kind of promotions can the Bet the Board listeners expect, not only before the season, then, of course, throughout the course of the regular season?
Yeah, well, we have a good deposit bonus special going on right now for your listeners. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, head over there and sign up. We got a 75% welcome bonus for you. Use code 75BTB. Existing players, if you already have a BetOnline account, use promo code 50BTB for 50% reload. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard. So get on over there and get your bonuses and play with some house money this weekend.
David, it's always a pleasure getting you on here to get the house perspective. And as we told the listeners, each and every Thursday throughout the course of the season, you'll be on sharing that sharp action, some of the liabilities, and hopefully in an upbeat and positive mood talking about all the money that you guys made. Although, let's be honest here, our listeners love to hear the the tales of misery that come from that side of the counter. So, Dave,
yes,
thanks as always.
How they do.
And, folks, you can follow Dave on Twitter, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. All of those great promotions available on the at Bet the Board pod Twitter handle or, of course, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. Dave, thanks again. We'll talk to you next week. Payne, we heard Dave talk a little bit about, you know, some of the numbers moving and not a whole lot of major adjustments out there for games that didn't have a major shift in personnel. And, of course, we had some major adjustments take place last week, you know, with the Sam Bradford trade, him going to Minnesota. How do we look to assess the Vikings and Eagles just to kind of start with, given some of the reshuffling under center?
Yeah, I think it's definitely two different situations. As an Eagles underbacker on the season wins total, quite happy. If you listen to the preview podcast on BetTheBoardPodcast.com, there was a bunch of win totals we gave out. One was the Eagles. Carson Wentz at this point I just don't think is ready. So I think that drop-off is much, much more dramatic. For the Vikings, I don't see a huge adjustment there. I know you kind of tweeted out about this, and I wanted to wait on that. I'm kind of in the other camp of this. Yes, the Vikings, they gave up a first and a fourth. I think that fourth can actually convert to a second if the Vikings win the Super Bowl. And I think this was the bigger thing. We kind of poked fun at the Eagles and what they spent and the assets they gave up to assemble that three-headed QB unit. But, you know, better lucky than good. Teddy goes down, opportunity presented itself, and they did a great job getting out of their own way there. But I think one thing's really important to take away is good business in general is when both parties are happy. And I think Minnesota's extremely happy here from a lot of perspectives. Sam Bradford, they're only paying him $7 million. He got his $11 million bonus. It was already paid by Philly. I think there's a familiarity there with the regime, obviously, with Adrian Peterson. And the biggest thing here, Sam Bradford was the 12th best quarterback last season. He was actually rated better than Teddy Bridgewater, and that was without a running game. That was without a better defense. And he was playing in a system of Chip Kelly's that we don't think works at this point. What you can't question about Sam Bradford is his accuracy. And in general, when you look at this Vikings team, it's a pass-to-run ratio. They were the third most heavy run team. Mike Zimmer is going to rely on defense and running. So by design, no matter the name of the quarterback, he's going to be a game manager.
And we've seen all sorts of different things happen in the market with their win total and what have you. What kind of adjustment do you make personally on a game-to-game basis from, let's say, Teddy Bridgewater to Sam Bradford and then Sam Bradford to Sean Hill? Because you've seen this number on the Vikings-Titans opener go down to a pick when Bradford was out and it looked like Hill was going to start, right back up to 2.5. Naturally, 3 is the key number, and the price was 3.5 there. So as the markets say, there's a 1.5-point drop-off from Bridgewater, something you agree with, disagree with. Curious to get your thoughts there.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's probably pretty even footing between Bridgewater up to Sam Bradford. I don't see any dramatic adjustment there. Obviously, Sean Hill is a huge downgrade. When you talk about a week one line with Sam Bradford being implemented into a system, you know, for 1 week at this point, granted he's familiar with that system, you know, it's probably not as dramatic as a downgrade from Bradford to Hill. But Sean Hill is what he is at this point. This is a guy that's kind of just there. He's got no arm strength. But again, if it's any team other than the Vikings and they're a little more pass-heavy, that number should be changed a little bit more. This case, this is a defensive team. This is a run-first team. Where you really start to look at the quarterback stuff is when they get behind and you can't play, you know, your conservative style of offense and you have to play from behind. I don't think that will be a case, especially in week one. Again, I think this is an adjustment that in a move that the Vikings had to make. I really do. I believe this. If you listen to any of those player quotes, players were deflated. They saw Teddy go down. It was one of the most gruesome injuries they had ever seen. And the overall kind of feeling in that locker room was just pure. I didn't know if they could even go on. Like, apparently this injury was so gruesome that the players were done before the season started. So this was a massive trade for them, kind of, you know, rejuvenates their spirits. And I think this is a good comparison. I'm going to kind of ask you this because I saw what you tweeted out and I was waiting to kind of hit you on this. If, Todd, you're moving into a brand new house with your family, it's awesome. It's the biggest, the best house you've ever owned. After 5 weeks, the AC unit blows. Are you going to Walmart and purchasing the $29 floor fan, or are you spending bigger bucks and replacing it with an equivalent or something better? We know they just spent $1 billion on this new stadium. I don't think you could have just gone in with Sean Hill.
Well, I think it's a great question, and that's kind of was going to lead into my next one that you segued so nicely there. Is this a decision the Vikings make because of the new stadium? Is it something that they could have absorbed if this were going to be a final season, a transitional year at TFC Bank Stadium, where they go, you know what, we want to see how Teddy's recovery goes. We're not going to trade for somebody. We're going to take our lumps. We're going to move up in the draft and potentially look to reload again for Bridgewater's return next season. I think by going out and getting a guy like Bradford, I don't see him as a massive upgrade. I know other people feel differently, and he may very well make me eat those words. I get the feeling by doing this, the Vikings are of the mindset, you described the gruesome nature of this injury, that Teddy Bridgewater won't be back to start the 2017 season, and we could see Sam Bradford as the guy taking reps under center, not only for the 16 regular season games this year, but the 16 regular season games next season while Bridgewater recovers.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that was the biggest thing here. When you talk to some of the guys that are in that organization, if there was not an orthopedist on hand to sedate him, to kind of move parts back to where they needed for blood flow until they could rush him to the hospital, they thought he could potentially lose his leg. That's how gruesome this injury was, and I think this is, again, more than a 16 injury. It could leak out into the 2017 season as well, as you nailed it. So this, to me, was a must-get. You're looking at Adrian Peterson, too, nearing 32 years old. The defense is built pretty well. A lot of upgrades on the offensive line. So I think this is a team that's in win-now mode for sure.
And you hit real quickly on the Eagles. We're both sitting on Eagles win total under, so clearly Carson Wentz taking his lumps under center without going through a full preseason should bode well there. What does Sam Bradford's departure from Philadelphia do for you on a week-to-week basis? We've seen, obviously, the market adjust for Cleveland. Philly, number as high as the Eagles -7 for their opener against the Browns. This price down to 4. Do we think it's trial by fire and just, hey, we're going to open up the whole playbook and Doug Peterson elects to go with a rookie? I personally was surprised. You bring in Chase Daniel, he knows your system, and you're still going to go with Carson Wentz right out of the gates.
Yeah, this is a horrific move by Doug Peterson. It's probably, you know, his first massive mistake at this point. You brought in Chase Daniel, that was your guy, knew your system. You paid him pretty well for a backup, so why you're not using him here, I'm not quite sure. Those reps for rookies are invaluable, and he didn't get the necessary reps with that rib injury here. I get potentially wanting to give him some confidence against a team like Cleveland, against a defense like Cleveland that should be an absolute dumpster fire this year. But this is a significant downgrade from Bradford to Wentz. It's actually probably about a point and a half downgrade from Chase Daniels to Wentz. So this is going to be an interesting line. If this continues to tick up, I think we'll start to see some Cleveland money in the market, as bad as that defense is.
Yeah, a little bit surprising. I mean, it's not as though Wentz came from a power program and was facing SEC defenses on a regular basis. Going up against Jacksonville State in the FCS Championship, a little bit different than what he'll encounter against the Cleveland Browns. So I know a game that won't have a whole lot of intrigue for the casual fan, I think, in the betting market. We'll take on some added significance when Cleveland takes on Philly. That total, of course, also open 45 down to 41. Will be interesting to see where the over-under goes. And Payne, something to think about as we look towards next Monday's podcast, not to jump ahead. May want to get your thoughts on some of the quarterback valuations and what some of the biggest names in the sport are worth the number versus some of the secondary guys, since I know people always ask, especially with Romo going out, you know, what would it look like for the Packers with no Aaron Rodgers? What would it look like this season for the Colts? So would be interested to get your thoughts next week when we recap week one.
Absolutely.
As far as some of the marquee games on the week one schedule, as we mentioned, hey guys, we're not here to cover every single game in great detail. We just don't have that amount of time or a luxury. So by all means, if there's certain games you want to see us with a little bit of a deeper dive into, tweet us at BetTheBoardPod or tweet Payne at Payne Insider or myself at Todd Furman. So Payne, let's get it kicked off with Tampa Bay at Atlanta. We know Atlanta, you described Cleveland as a dumpster fire. The Falcons were just that over the second half of last year. A lot of people talking about Tampa as a potential sleeper. Maybe if things break right, they can go 9-7 and sneak into the playoffs. Atlanta, a 3-point favorite total at 47.5. Have not seen much movement on this game, but we do anticipate there being money coming in on one of these two sides.
Yeah, regardless of you know, what you think of Jameis Winston, the guy is a leader of men for whatever reason. No matter the level, no matter the team he's on.
Hold on a second. We got through the Florida State Kool-Aid part earlier in this podcast. I gave you the floor. I allowed you to laud, you know, Jimbo and DeAndre Francois. Am I going to have to deal with this crap again right now?
I'm just telling you, guys gravitate towards him. He knew this was a big year. He set the tone, came into camp 20 pounds lighter, and suddenly there's a trickle-down effect. Mike Evans comes into camp 15 pounds lighter. So I think those two guys are pretty vital for the Bucs to take that leap this year, along with the secondary, which is much improved. You bring in Brent Grimes in free agency. You invest your first pick in Vernon Hargraves. So you think that helps the defense big time. In general, if you listen to the preview podcast, we're really down on Atlanta this year. That fast start last year was a byproduct of a super soft schedule. Their first 11 weeks last year only faced two teams with a winning record. They were the Redskins and Texans. Both were just 9-7. So I think, you know, this Atlanta team, down year. The key here is what we saw is they must protect the ball in the red zone. The red zone turnovers for Atlanta are just absolutely killing them. They killed them a season ago. We talked about this offense throwing to spots. Hasn't worked out overly well at this point. Bottom line here, you're going to see some good money on the Bucs.
And for those Atlanta Falcon fans listening to this podcast for the first time since we launched 2 years ago, not a team that's going to get lauded with a ton of praise throughout the course of the regular season, so you may want to sit with bated breath. Atlanta's one of those teams we love to pick apart.
Don't say that. I think there's a caveat. I think there's a caveat here for new listeners and maybe a reminder for old. If it doesn't make money, it doesn't make sense for us, so don't take offense when we crap on your favorite team 1 week. It's nothing personal. We didn't call your baby ugly. It's about earning for us, and I think more times than not, if we take a dump on your favorite team and say week 7, we're probably loving them in week 8. Everything we kind of do here is from an unbiased perspective because it's all about money. The players, the teams, you know, no more. They're brands to me. They're companies. I'm buying and selling in the market. That's basically it. So I'm not getting down on my knees Saturday night praying to my Tom Brady poster. It's just not going to happen. I have no emotional attachment to anybody in these teams long term.
As you mentioned, it's all about valuation, knowing when to buy, knowing when to sell each and every Sunday throughout the course of the regular season. You hit on the Vikings a little bit earlier. I think this game has a little bit of intrigue. As we talked about on the preview podcast, people very high on the Titans. And, of course, the Titans, near and dear to us, got us off to a 1-0 start with a comfortable cover against the Dolphins in the final game of preseason. What do we make of this number with Minnesota sitting as a 2-point favorite, total of 41? Can the Titans start the regular season 1-0 for the third straight season?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's have no fear. Mike Mularkey's here. We know what he wants to do with the ball. He wants to pound the ball. And I'm going to paraphrase a press conference from the offseason with Mularkey, and he kept hammering it home. I'm going to do what works, what he's always done. I want to be physical. I want to set the tone. I want to run the ball. The key here is just correct me if I'm wrong. I'm looking at this. He's been fired twice as a head coach already. In those two attempts, he's only been able to maintain both jobs for a combined 3 seasons. He's 18-39 overall, and he's won 4 of his last 25. I'm not quite sure he knows what works at this stage. He might be in full-blown George Costanza mode, just do everything opposite. Mularkey's really the only reason I've held back my optimism for Tennessee this season.
Oh, and they say the definition of insanity is when you continue to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. That may be the perfect epitomization of what we've seen from Mike Mularkey in the National Football League. Oakland and New Orleans, again, a game that I don't think will get a whole lot of national attention, but two teams, in my opinion, that are very fascinating with different expectations coming into the season. Right now we're looking at New Orleans, a modest 1-point favorite at home in the Superdome. Total here, 51. Some interesting news breaking over the weekend. Drew Brees' agent Tom Condon reportedly wanted a 5-year deal worth $85 million, as Drew Brees thinks he has 5 more good years in the tank. We talked about it a little bit. Shoulder strength might be there for the deep ball. Accuracy inside of 7 yards was absolutely abysmal. Hey, I love guys that live in a fantasy world. Can this team compete on a week-to-week basis?
Well, I don't really think that matters. I think what we're looking for is this week. And here's kind of the overall problem. I can't buy into the Oakland hype just yet. And right now, all that is hype. And while the market's treating them as a proven commodity, I am not going to do so, and I think Mason kind of touched on it, and I can concur. There's been a little sharp money on New Orleans at this point, but the problem for me is they lack a ton of depth, and in the market overall, we've kind of seen dislike for the Saints in the marketplace. It's one of the win totals that actually dropped and went down from 7 to 6.5. Relatively speaking, we kind of throw another jab at Rob Ryan here. They have to improve defensively. You can't be worse than 32. So we should see improvement from that side of the ball, but there's really no depth. That's kind of what scares me here. The over, and I don't like overs. This seems to be somewhat attractive to me. We've kind of gotten past that key number here. There was some 50.5 in the marketplace. You're now at the key of 51, and there's some 51.5 in the marketplace. So the over makes some sense to me. Haven't gone there yet, but it's something I'm going to explore.
I will say one thing for those folks still able to play daily fantasy in their respective states. This might be a game where you look to load up with a number of Oakland Raiders or members of the New Orleans Saints, as Payne alluded to. Should be one of the higher scoring affairs of the opening weekend. And from one it team in the form of the Oakland Raiders to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are now 4.5-point home underdogs as they play host to the Green Bay Packers. Total here sits at 48. Green Bay, by all accounts, should have a healthy Jordy Nelson and a revitalized offense with a slimmed-down Eddie Lacy. You know, how do we go about assessing this Week 1 matchup? Do we want to buy the hype in Jacksonville? And when might there be a buy point if this number, say, happen to hit 6?
Yes, similar to Oakland, not buying the hype quite yet. We have seen some money on Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. It looks like they're getting their weapons situation sorted out. You nailed it with Jordy Nelson, what he brings to that offense, the dynamic nature of what he does, just allowing other people to kind of play in space. We saw last year he went down, suddenly everybody got the film on them, and we're just going to jam the receivers at the line of scrimmage. No one can really beat one-on-one press man coverage. That kind of changes a bit. Jared Cook, who I have not been very high on, if you've listened to this podcast over the years, I think he's kind of lazy. That said, he really hasn't had a quarterback, so running routes sometimes can get annoying if you don't have a guy that can get you the ball. I think Aaron Rodgers, a little bit different of a quarterback. He's been flashing during camp. He provides that big target Rodgers in Green Bay hasn't really had since JaMychal Finley. So I think this is kind of a big year for Green Bay. This, obviously, laying points on the road, not something I'm really running to do. I need a little more to consider Jacksonville. Maybe 6 is that number. I'm not quite sure yet. This is another game that I'm kind of sitting out on. And we're going to talk about this a lot. As we alluded to earlier with Dave Mason, some of these lines have been out since April. The market's pretty mature at this point. A little different than college football, but I know there hasn't been a ton of sharp action coming to the market, but the market for itself is pretty mature at this point. So a lot of Week 1 lines, I'm going to be on the sidelines for a bunch of them.
And I think that's an important lesson, not to go off on a tangent. When you talk about these numbers, how they've been out there for so long, yes, limits will increase the week of the game, and there will be some opportunity. It's not like these prices are going to stay static, but at the same time, the professionals have realized, hey, they've taken advantage through various angles and approaches to trying to get down on a lot of these games, but you won't have that gross overreaction or public perception playing a huge role that we typically like to feast on throughout the course of the playoffs, but obviously through the other weeks of the regular season, where one performance gives you 2.5 to 3 points of value that you otherwise wouldn't see.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And I, you know, in general, I kind of, and we've talked about this a little bit, is yes, you want to be ahead of the marketplace, and I think we're always going to be able to do that. But for me, I need to not only have the numbers, have the analytics, have that kind of thing in the equation. For whatever reason, I trust my eyes with this specific sport, and we can go and hammer it home about Arizona and the Arizona Cardinals last year. And I kept saying I couldn't put my finger on it, even though the analytic guys absolutely love this team, rated them number one. To my eye, there was just something missing there, and we kind of saw it. They kind of limped into the playoffs, probably should have gotten beat at home to Green Bay and then just shit the bed on the road against Carolina. There's just something wrong there. So for me, I like my eyes to kind of agree with what all my information is saying, what the analytics are saying, and what my guys kind of provide me information-wise.
I trust my eyes as well, although I did feel like I was walking through the regular season blind in regards to the Carolina Panthers much of last season, only to feel validated in the final game of the season when Denver was able to get there in the Super Bowl. Giants Dallas Payne, right now we'll call it a pick 'em at Bet Online. Total on this game 46. What do we make of the Dak Prescott debut against the new look Giants, who went out there, as we mentioned on the preview podcast, retooled on the defensive side, brought in a lot of veterans. Not the recipe for long-term growth and sustained success, but they do have some big names and familiar faces out there in key integral roles.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've kind of seen the downgrade. We're looking at about a four-point move here in the market. That's probably somewhat accurate on Romo down to Dak. You got to kind of pause the Dak love at this point. He had a great preseason, especially as a backup. But again, I'm going to hammer this home. Nobody knew what he was. Nobody had film on him. Nobody was game planning specific for him. If you go back and watch the games as I did, the numbers weren't as crisp and clean as they appear on paper. He threw a horrific interception in the Dolphins preseason game. It gets called back for a late hit on the quarterback. He threw another bad pass that was intercepted that got called back for penalty throughout that preseason. So the numbers not as clean as they were on paper. When you talk about this game here, I think the big question is the New York Giants offensively, what are they going to be able to do? The preseason, if that was any indication, it was just very, very bad. I'm pretty shocked. That was kind of, you know, the reason why they you know, promoted their offensive coordinator to head coach. They didn't want Eli at this age going through a new system and learning it. They thought, you know, that the clock was ticking on Eli Manning. So it'll be interesting to see. And I know this is kind of a horror story, and some of the people like to listen to this, the public bettors, the average Joe. This was a game where the sharp bettors got caught with their pants down. They were initially going over this game. I've seen some of the sharpest groups actually go over 49 in this game. All of a sudden an injury pops, and you're now looking at 46. Not the best position for the sharp guys to be in. So sometimes they make mistakes. Sometimes they have misfortune as well, just like the rest of the bettors.
And I think there were also some groups that were looking to lay anything less than a field goal with the Vikings as well in that particular spot, laying some 2.5, being stuck there. Now, at least with the market back to 2.5, they're able to get off the position, but that middle opportunity or siding the game no longer available. You mentioned that total pain at 46. What do you make of the current number now with so many question marks on Dallas's offense and a defense that we really don't know what we're going to get from Jason Garrett's side?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they come out with, what Scott Linehan does offensively to kind of get Prescott going. You would think a very similar thing to what we saw. Again, I'll reference it to Florida State last night. More rollouts, get his legs going, a lot of the ground and pound. Don't put a lot of pressure on Dak at this point, but that New York Giants defense, Spagnuolo year two, to me, when you look at first units in preseason, that Giants defense, one of the most impressive to me, brought in a lot of guys. Offensively, again, they weren't able to get it going in preseason. Maybe that changes here. I'm not quite sure. That Dallas defense, front seven, you just don't know what to expect. For me, I feel like this is probably a good number with these two quarterbacks. I couldn't make it, you know, any lower than 45, 45 and a half with that Dallas defense, and that's kind of where it's at right now. So nothing for me at this point on the total.
And as we shift gears to another team breaking in a quarterback, at least for a short duration, in the form of the New England Patriots, Arizona, a six-point favorite. Total in this game, 47. Jimmy Garoppolo makes his much-awaited, anticipated, I'm not sure what adjective we want to use to describe it, debut under center for the Pats. Arizona, there may not have been a team that looked worse in the preseason this year than Carson Palmer and company, but interesting number, open pick. Obviously, you see Brady get suspended. Boom, out to six. And from what we've been told and seen, professionals not shying away from laying the lumber here, which may not be the best number in the market.
Yes. The problem here is Arizona scares me a little bit. We saw how Carson Palmer finished the season a year ago with all the picks. He's come into preseason, three picks on 22 attempts. Something kind of isn't going right there with him. The offensive line, a couple question marks there. Maybe he's feeling the pressure. We know Arians likes to pass the ball deep down the field, and that requires a little more time in the pocket. Carson Palmer not really mobile ever, and even especially at this point in his career, so that kind of is a little bit scary. For us, we kind of hit on this on the preview podcast, is the one-game setting. This is a little different animal than Tom Brady going down in Week 7, and then, you know, with about a week prep time, Garoppolo sprung into action here. They've had months to prepare. Garoppolo's had months to prepare. There's a game plan specific for this. So, I mean, from that perspective, you'd think there's some value on New England at this point. I just don't trust Jimmy Garoppolo. That's the problem. I just don't think he's very good at this point. And really a lot more questions on New England defensively. I did not like what I saw defensively from the New England Patriots in the preseason. There was some holes there. Ninkovich down now with the suspension. It scares me a little bit there. So for me, maybe you're looking at Arizona as a teaser leg this week. Maybe you're looking at Arizona in some suicide pools this week. I don't see a ton here with this game. I think you're going to see some sharp money on the under. We've seen it come in a little bit, and I think that'll probably continue to trickle down the total.
So, Penn, you're saying Barkevious Mingo isn't the savior in New England?
No, although I think he does have a little rejuvenation. I think he'll be used properly. He's undersized. I think he kind of fits that system better than what they were using him for in Cleveland. And basically, it's just one of those, you know, buy low on a guy who was drafted early on and see if we can make things stick. And Belichick loves to prove that he's the smartest guy in the room. So if he can get anything out of Mingo at this point, it's a bonus.
Oh, and with that total at 47, Payne, you talk about the game plan and preparing. Could you make a case if we see the first half market open up at 24 that maybe the Patriots are a little bit more conservative, not looking to air it out until they face a deficit against this Cardinals defense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably a good angle. There's, you know, also some 47.5s in the full game marketplace. But yeah, I'm a bigger proponent when looking under for that first half, especially if you can lock in some of those key numbers. I know we've kind of locked in a couple totals early on that have moved a bunch. Didn't want to address those. But like Cleveland, Philadelphia, that was a game that we went under 44 on. Maybe I would consider it again if the market opens up in the first half at that key of 21. We'll see if it does. Probably not really interested if it doesn't.
And, you know, of course, we didn't cover every single game in great detail, but when you look at the remainder of the slate, Cincinnati at the Jets, you're looking at the Jets, a 2.5-point home underdog, total 41.5. Kansas City, a full touchdown favorite playing host to the San Diego Chargers, that number 44.5. Baltimore, -3, you have to lay $1.20 at BetOnline, total 44.5 against the Buffalo Bills. Houston Texans, this number did get as low as 4 at one point. The Texans now 6.5-point chalk, total of 44 against the Bears. Seattle, number ballooned out past 10 to 10.5, total 44. And Detroit, Indy, you've seen some money come in on the dog here in the Detroit Lions. That number from 5.5 down to 3.5, total of 51. Any of those other games really jump off the page or things of note that our listeners should factor into their handicapping decision?
Yeah, I think when we looked at some of those games, I know specifically, and again, it was kind of getting out ahead of the market at this point. Ryan Fitzpatrick hadn't signed back with the Jets, but under 42.5 took significant money in Cincinnati in New York. Other than that, nothing too crazy at this point. Maybe you look at San Diego, would like to get the hook there if I went that route, but not a huge downgrade from Jamaal Charles to Ware. Actually, at this stage in his career, Ware might be the more efficient back. The offense actually took a leap forward when Jamaal Charles went down and Ware was implemented into that system. Hint, hint, some fantasy owners. But other than that, I don't see a ton on this week one card. I have played one game to this point substantially, and we can kind of probably touch on that a little bit later at the end of the podcast.
And when we look at the two Monday night games, of course, we will get to those when we start our normal podcast recording schedule on Monday, where Pittsburgh goes into the nation's capital to take on the Redskins, and the long-anticipated regular season debut of the Los Angeles Rams taking on San Francisco. Payne, we talked about a couple of the movies we saw during the summer. I had to bring you out of your comfort zone as we get closer to the start of the regular season. Why don't you fill in the loyal Bet the Board listenership as to what movie we elected to see, and more importantly, your feedback on said genre for this movie?
Well, I think most people know I kind of just go with the flow here and let you kind of just do whatever you feel like doing.
Go with the flow, my ass. You know what? Maybe you've painted a different portrayal of yourself through the podcast and through social media than what I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Sure, we'll you know what? I'm not going to argue here. It's early in the morning. It's Tuesday. You know, we haven't hit mid-season form. You're a go-with-the-flow guy. We'll go with that.
Not a huge fan of stupidity. That usually gets me.
You have been doing this podcast with me for 2+ years, so you have to become much more tolerant of stupidity, let's be honest.
So I said to myself, you know, there's a bunch of movies out there. I could go see Hands of Stone, a sports movie. I could go see War Dogs. Probably our listeners would prefer that better. And in comes Todd from the top rope. Let's go see Don't Breathe, which is a horror movie. Not really my cup of tea in general. Maybe you get me on like the Saw movies. I like those. Those are pretty good. In general, I went to see this because Todd suggested it, and then I kind of did some research on it, and I said, IMDb, thousands and thousands of people can't be wrong, nearly giving it an 8 out of 10. There must be an extremely low standard for horror movies, because this was a pile of dog junk. Maybe a 5.5 out of 10, maybe a 6 if I'm being nice and I'm in a good mood, and, you know, Florida State did win last night, so maybe a 6 out of 10 for this thing.
I am a huge horror movie fan. I think more often than not they're ridiculous and pure entertainment value. And when you look at what they did box office wise, it was the top grossing movie this weekend at the box offices, paying $15.7 million ahead of Suicide Squad, which was the only other movie that got into double digits with $10 million. It got an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't think I would give it anything close to an 86%. Did I find myself entertained? Did I find certain scenes absolutely laughable and somewhat horrifying? We won't kind of give it away at the end, but there is a disturbing scene or two late in the movie. You know, I thought it was what it was. Would I pay to go see it again? Probably not. Did it entertain me for, you know, the better part of an hour and a half? Sure, I guess I'll give it the one thumbs up instead of two for whatever grading system we're choosing to employ this year.
Well, I think that's the benefit to this movie. It's an hour and 20 minutes, in and out.
I mean, it's a heck of a lot better sometimes than watching these 4.5-hour college football games, I'll tell you that much. But because you're a go-with-the-flow guy, I'm going to give you the chance. You get to pick the movie for next week's podcast. You have something in mind, Payne, that'll cater more to your sensibilities.
I haven't really looked yet what's out next week. Do you have that list in front of you? I know they come out on Fridays. War Dogs has been out a while now.
War Dogs has been out. I mean, I figured Bad Moms would somehow factor into your equation. I mean, I know you're a fan of some of that nonsense. I don't think the animated films will get there. There is the movie about, I don't know if she's a cyborg or what the hell is going on, probably too much in the horror genre with Morgan. So, you know, we may have to let you tweet that out and tweet it out from the podcast main Twitter account to try and share that if you don't have a concrete decision on what movie, you know, we're going to be breaking down next week.
We'll let them know for sure. This will be probably a... We'll get them ready. Maybe I'll take a look later today, but by tomorrow we'll have something out. Maybe we even open up a poll section and let our listeners vote. We'll throw in two or three or four movies. They vote whatever the highest percentage is, we go and see.
I actually like that idea. The real question becomes if we throw out certain movie choices, I'll be interested to see where our listeners steer us and if it becomes, well, we want to subject them to these other movies for some of the crappy movie reviews they've given us over the last season. Plus, you mentioned some things changing around here, and we teased it a little bit at the top of the podcast. Thrilled to announce that the American Gaming Association, you can visit their website at www.americangaming.org, has elected to come on board and serve as a sponsor. They're going to sponsor our featured game of the week, the Monday night and Thursday game. Hopefully we'll get their CEO to talk about some ongoing legalization efforts that are taking place across this fine country. And for those folks unfamiliar with the American Gaming Association, it's the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry as a whole, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. I'll have the opportunity myself to contribute to their legalization of sports betting panel taking place out here in Las Vegas at the Global Gaming Expo in late September. So thrilled to be doing that. You can sign up at americangaming.org/about/contact for some of the great trends that we'll use, talking about, you know, money wagered illegally, and some of the ongoing updates. We'll also try and share a lot of their press releases on bettheboardpodcast.com throughout the fall. So it should be interesting to see what kind of developments there. Great content. Thrilled to have them on board. Really validates, Payne, what we've tried to do to educate a lot of the bettors. And, of course, this podcast, more often than not, for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the 98 percentile that are weekend warriors, this is a hobby to them. Every week, you know, they throw their $25 down on the game, and they do it responsibly. I think that's kind of what most of our listeners are at this point, but we kind of gear towards the other aspect and talk a lot of sharp sides, and I know a lot of big bettors listen to this, but overall, we just want to provide a good product here that informs, and I think it's a great partnership with the American Gaming Association.
Sports betting is a lens that we all too often view a lot of our athletic endeavors through, and through the quest for ongoing regulated, legalized, and transparent marketplace. It would be the benefit of the leagues and bettors across this fine country having access to a lot of the sports books that we do here in Nevada. And, of course, you can follow the American Gaming Association at Amer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, A-S-S-N. So at Amer Gaming, A-S-S-N. And, of course, we'll tweet out their Twitter handle as well so you can stay abreast of some of those major developments. Shifting gears, Payne, as we always do to close with the marquee game of the week. It'll be the one played Thursday night, the first Super Bowl rematch to start an NFL regular season since 1970, and the debut of Evanston's own Trevor Siemian, the first time a Northwestern graduate will be starting under center. You're looking at Carolina, a three-point favorite. You do have to lay $1.30 right now at BetOnline. Total on this game sits at 42. How do we begin to assess these two familiar foes locking horns again to kick off this season?
Still not saying his name, but the Denver Broncos, one of the hardest teams for me to gauge this season. We've seen some sharp money against their win total, and obviously here in week one, big revenge angle. So there's a lot of questions surrounding the QB position. But to me, it kind of feels like a public opinion. That feels like an uninformed opinion. One thing you kind of see about football is a lot of not so knowledgeable people, they use the quarterback talk as the crutch. For me, I'm trying to make points the other way. And when you look at this, Peyton Manning was the 32nd rated quarterback last year. Guys like Josh McCown, Brian Hoyer, A.J. McCarron, Brian Fitzpatrick, and yes, Blaine Gabbert were leaps and bounds better than Peyton Manning. So I get the question marks at QBs for the Broncos, but can you be any worse than last year? And I have a hard time thinking that can be the case, so I have a little more optimism. Haven't touched this game yet. I'd likely need to see 3.5. Would definitely get to the window with a 4 in terms of contemplating Denver. At this point, if you're listening to the podcast, I don't care what the final score is. You cannot make money long-term playing Carolina at the current price. You're talking about nearly a 6-point move when you factor in juice. That ship has sailed.
Now, Mason talked about it being one-sided betting so far, and of course that trend may change closer to game time. I don't foresee it really shifting. About 7 out of every 10 tickets coming in on Carolina. What kind of home field advantage do you give the Broncos, especially in this standalone type scenario that it'll be an electric atmosphere? You mentioned some of the skepticism about how Denver will be throughout the course of the regular season when other teams have a lot more footage of Trevor Siemian and know what he is under center. But I feel like Denver can use the element of surprise to their advantage in this particular spot. I think we'll see a steady dose of C.J. Anderson, still one of the league's elite defenses. And what we've seen over the past couple of years, the defending Super Bowl champ often installed as a favorite. Maybe they take an us-against-the-world mentality and get things going on the right foot with a home game in what can be a difficult place to play for the Carolina Panthers, who are not that familiar with being in the Rocky Mountain State.
Yeah, bottom line here, I'm hoping the line stays exactly where it is. It keeps me off the game. So there's definitely, you know, public money as well as some sharp money on Carolina getting out ahead of this. That's definitely an angle you should incorporate in terms of your handicapping that opening week, especially when they pair these teams against each other. So that revenge angle is definitely a factor here, but at this point, likely already factored into the number. Again, praying it stays here. The one thing that we've seen is early success with Denver being at home, the adjustment to altitude in Carolina, it being kind of their first game, not potentially having their sea legs under them. It'll be interesting to see. This Carolina team, by default of their division, I think is going to be good. I think they might take a step back this year. I'm just not in love with Carolina. And again, you know, not in love with Carolina. Shocking news. But I think here, when you look at this team, there is some weapons for Cam Newton this year. You get guys back healthy. Funchess looks like he may take that next step in year two. That could be, you know, positive for that offense. Olsen kind of is that crutch for the offense. He's really beat up now. He's a gamer. He plays injured. He's going to go out there, but I'm hearing that injury is really hampering him. So that could be a big loss for the offense. I just don't want anything to do with this game at this point. I really don't. And again, praying it stays at the current number so I don't have to have a Denver ticket.
Talent upgrade-wise, you mentioned for Carolina, getting some key pieces of personnel back, mainly Kelvin Benjamin in the receiving core. We have no idea how the secondary will look. But as we've seen in the NFL, you can get better with individuals. Oftentimes, if you don't get the same breaks that you had, Carolina, a major beneficiary all last season of the field position game and turnover margin. Don't expect the Panthers to be as good or as fortunate this season, which may lead to plenty of opportunity for us to try and bet against them on a somewhat regular basis. For me personally, Payne, I actually have small investments on the total here. Went under 43 before the announcement of Trevor Siemian. Still think there is a little bit of an opportunity if there's a 42. About 21 for the first half might be more inclined to go that particular route. So for Payne Insider, Payne, I think we did all right for our first regular season podcast. We're not quite in mid-season form, but we'll get there a little bit at a time.
Not too bad. We got to get this out right now. So as I look at this clock, it is 10:40 a.m. Maybe we got people like just hacking our phone lines here, hacking into the system as the game I was about to give out to everybody is starting to move. Sam, you got your buddies on the line listening in on this.
No. Okay. Your buddies are all on hold, though.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we like them week 1 +3. Hopefully we get this turned around quick enough as we look at this. It's starting to move.
By the way, I'm not going to try and give a pick out here, but I don't think I could find one person on the street in the country that wants a piece of the Bears this weekend. That's usually good for us, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Bears are interesting. I know we didn't do a deep dive there because I think there's a lot of question marks. I would say at 7, the Bears make some sense, and I'm not going to speak for Payne. 6.5, probably not enough to get me involved. I just want to see more from the Bears and how this offense looks, some major concerns. And offensive line, Sam, I know you've mentioned it. If that's one of their biggest weaknesses, this isn't the team that you want to try and play right out of the gates if there's a chance that J.J. Watt's out there.
I do like the adding of Josh Sitton, though, to play left guard. They may have the best guard combo in football now. It's going to take time for them to adjust, but as we've talked about over the last couple of years, John Fox is going to keep games close. And I think I just read that SB Nation said the Bears are the worst team in football. No, they're not.
Yeah, I won't quite go that far. And we'll obviously have plenty of opportunities to talk about the Bears, especially next week when they play host to the Philadelphia Eagles, a game that may be an opportunity to try and invest. So for our producer you just heard there, Sam Panjatovic, you can follow him on Twitter, at SPShoot. You can follow Payne Insider on Twitter as well, at Payne Insider, my Twitter handle, at Todd Furman, and, of course, at BetTheBoardPod. Visit BetTheBoardPodcast.com, and more importantly, for those folks looking for a reliable sports book option this upcoming season, BetOnline has some great offers in place for you as our loyal listeners. Use the code 75BTB for those new customers. They get you 75% of your initial deposit for those returning who've been with us for over a season. Use the code 50BTB for a 50% sportsbook bonus. That should be in effect throughout the course of the season. Best of luck Thursday night when the NFL kicks off for real. Remember, it is a marathon, not a sprint. Don't feel the need to run over man, women, or children to the window until there are some worthwhile investment opportunities. And we'll be with you same time next week on Monday when we start to pick up our regular season schedule right here on the Bet the Board podcast.